This interview is brought to you by Panasonic Lumix G cameras for today's photographer. I'm here with Mr. Charlie McPherson from The Amazing Image, also found at theamazingimage.com. Now, Charlie is an award-winning wildlife photographer. He's an instructor and just an all-around guy who loves photography and taking pictures of really cool things. And Charlie and I touched base a couple weeks ago, and we came to the conclusion that it would be great to chat with him in this format to share some of his knowledge about wildlife photography and how to go about doing it and trials and tribulations, and sort of get that message out to the This Week in Photo Army. So, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Frederick. It's my pleasure.
It is my pleasure. Okay, so let's jump right into this. First of all, this is your first time on the show, so let's introduce you to the audience. Who is Charlie McPherson, and what brought you into the world of making images?
Well, most of my family and friends don't recognize me unless there's a camera in front of my face. And it's been like that since about 1973, although I did take a bunch of years off as I went on to other pursuits like raising a family. Mm. But I started off in photography with my dad's Argus Brick.
Remember the Argus? I'm not even Argus familiar brick? With that. What is that?
It's the Argus C3, and they called it a brick because it was shaped exactly like a brick.
Wow.
And you always waited for the moment that somebody would try to mug you and take it because you could hit them with it and kill them.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. It doubled it as a self-defense device, right?
Yeah, it was a no-nonsense camera. Yeah. A beautiful little rangefinder that worked terrific. But you know, for all the years I was shooting, I just spent a lot of time running around taking nature photos and seascapes and those sorts of things. But I always had a fascination with wildlife. And for all of my life, I operated on one really bad assumption. And my really bad assumption was that I would never be able to do it. Yeah. And that's because I grew up in Boston. Yeah. Now, you know what the wildlife is like in Boston.
Well, it's a different kind of wildlife, right?
Well, it's pigeons.
Yeah.
And squirrels. Exotic wildlife would be a robin or a chipmunk.
Mm.
And being a city kid, wildlife just never really crossed my mind as something that was ever going to be part of my reality. So I went into adulthood thinking, boy, it sure would be nice, but this is just not going to ever be part of my life.
Sure.
And then I got my first digital camera. Again, I'm a multilingual. I started off with a Nikon D70, although I'm now a Canon shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So walking through the woods, I heard a little rustle in the tree next to me, turned, shot instinctively, and got very, very lucky, and nailed a shot of a little black-capped chickadee taking off from a bush. Sharp eyes, wingtip blur. Now, I would love to tell you I planned it. I did not.
Thanks. Well, it was serendipity, right?
As just dumb luck. But it opened my eyes and shattered my my bad preconceptions. And I, in that instant, realized that the little kid's assumption that stayed with me my whole life was all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, I made the decision to start really pursuing wildlife. And so in the ensuing years, I've spent more and more time and money chasing wildlife every place from Southwest Florida in the winter to I'm now running a polar bear tour to the northeast corner of Alaska, a
wow.
little tiny Eskimo village in the Arctic Ocean.
Wow.
And it all started with a black-capped chickadee.
Now, so you've clearly been bitten by the wildlife bug and wanted to shoot that. Any particular reason why you haven't expanded that out to, say, landscapes as well? Or do you just like there's something magical about capturing that moment with wildlife?
I do landscapes. I enjoy them. But I usually shoot them when I'm out looking for wildlife and can't find any.
Landscapes are the backup.
They're the backup. I do a little other work. I mean, I've shot some commercial work for, probably in the West Coast. I'm not sure if you have Dunkin' Donuts, but they're a big coffee chain. Oh, you do? Oh, great. Oh, you guys have really come along.
This is
great.
I think the entire planet has Dunkin' Donuts by now. I think I saw one in Tokyo.
So. Well, if you go to Dunkin' Donuts and look at their portfolio of build-outs, some of that work was done by my daughter and me.
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's great. Okay, yeah. So we've got a little bit of the history. We know that you are Nikon and switched over to Canon. So let's talk a little bit about gear. You know, specifically, what does it take? So you're a Canon shooter. So what does it take in order to, taking it from the perspective of the photographer that's like, they're listening to this interview and they want to go out and do what you do. They're looking at your work and they're like, I could never do that. Maybe I should go get some better gear or different gear so that I can maybe aspire to do what Charlie does. So what do they need to do? How should they start?
That's a great question. The first thing that you're going to need is to overcome what you just said and what I believed all those years. You have to overcome the built-in notion that you can't do this because you can. And the single most important ingredient is absolute willingness to go out and put in the time and the effort and suffer for your craft and be willing to fail over and over and over. It is not over till you quit.
Yeah.
But when you quit, it's over.
Right.
So that's by far the most important ingredient. Now, as far as gear, you know, I'm a big proponent of telling my students and others that the gear really does not make the photographer.
Mm-hmm.
That you can shoot a good image with jolly near anything. In fact, you should see the work my daughter does with her Holga. It's mind-blowing.
Love that.
But yeah. The Holga, for those who don't know, is, what do they cost now? About $29?
Yeah, I think yeah. $29 with a $28 discount or something.
Right. And of course, you never quite know what the camera's going to do with all the light leaks.
And that's the magic
lenses.
Of it. Yeah,
that's the magic, right. I have no interest in it, but she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And she's, by the way, at RebeccaMacPhoto.com. Oh, so anyway, then a little plug for my daughter.
Yeah.
So as far as wildlife, it's a lot like sports. These are two pursuits where the gear actually does kind of matter. And one of the things you'll need most is a nice long telephoto. I started off shooting with, I forget, it was like a 75 to 300, which I quickly replaced with Sigma, by the way, has a really nice sweet spot in their lineup. The 150 to 500 telephoto, the new versions have optical stabilization. Sigma calls it OS. It's a little dark. At 500 millimeters, it's a 6.3. But with camera bodies getting better and better with better high ISO performance, you can push them further and further. That's a sweet lens. It's just a smidge over $1,000. And I know that sounds like a lot, but
it is a lot. You're like, no, it sounds like a lot, but it is.
Well, but compared to my other favorite lens, I shoot almost incessantly with the Canon 600 millimeter f4. Now that's the old version, which is the one I have that weighs 12 pounds. That's a $9,200 lens. I would tell you this. I think that the 600 f4 is definitely a better lens, but it's not nine times better.
Hmm. Interesting.
That Sigma makes a nice piece of glass, and for wildlife, that's kind of entry level budget. You can do some really good work with that.
Have you ever considered buying any used gear?
I did once.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it.
No.
I bought a Canon 28-300, which is a great lens. But despite the description online, it arrived quite a bit more dinged up than they had described. I used it for a while, sold it. But, of course, I disclosed all that when I sold it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so I shoot a lot with that 600. I use the 100, 400 on my second body. And the two bodies I'm shooting right now are the 5D Mark II and the 7D. The 7D is a much, much, much better wildlife camera because it has much better autofocus than the 5D Mark II. Now, of course, the Mark III is out and it's going to blow everything else away.
Right.
But the other thing that's really important for wildlife is frame rate. And the 7D at 8 frames a second, not bad. And you need those frames because there's so much about the animal that you cannot control. you can control your depth of field and your shutter speed and your position, and maybe move yourself into a place where the animal's in better light. Who knows? A lot you can control, but you cannot control the animal's head position, their movement, their behavior. So, frequently, I'll give you an example. I was in Denali last year, and one of the lessons I always teach people is to be ready to shoot instantly, no hesitation. There was a lynx. Lynx is a cute little cat. Well, he's cute if you're not getting eaten by him.
If he's not chasing you, right?
Right. But he's about the size of a really small dog. I refer to him as about 10 pounds of bad news.
Oh, wow.
Well, this lynx popped out of the bush, and I had the 600 in my hand and shot. I would much rather have put down the 600, grabbed the 100, 400, framed it up a little bit better. But this little lynx was in position for 3 seconds. 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the shot. And now I kept shooting. As he just turned and walked away, and I kept shooting, kept pumping that shutter, pop, 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 trying to keep the buffer from being full, where you get that terrifying message from the camera that says, busy.
Which translates to, I'm going to make you miss right. a bunch of shots, right?
Oh, yeah. And this is when the animal does something just fantastic.
Yeah, as soon as you're buffering, the animal starts tap dancing and moonwalking right, and all that stuff. Right. And then you're ready to shoot again, and he's running.
Right, right. Absolutely. You must have shot some wildlife. Yeah. I didn't know they did. Did they do that in the Air Force? Is that something new?
It's a different kind of wildlife. different kind of shooting, too.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
So, but that fast frame rate is going to help you when the animal then turns. So you can keep shooting, just kind of bump, 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 keep shooting. And as he turns, you've got a great chance of catching that sideways glance, the better body position. So that fast frame rate is something that really helps, particularly in birds.
Yeah.
In fact, I have an award-winning image of an ibis landing at dusk. It's just one of my favorite shots ever.
Wow.
And I always tell people this when I do lectures for camera clubs, that this image is one of a series of 17, and 16 of those images are garbage.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, that's the thing, because I'm guilty of this just like everyone else, but you look at these wildlife shots, there's, the iconic shot of the bear catching the salmon in its mouth as it's, swimming upstream and all this stuff. And you don't realize that how long it took to get that shot, perhaps, how long the photographer may have burned through 5 or 6 CF cards trying to get that particular shot. You just see that one shot and you're like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
In fact, the amount of time and effort that goes into making wildlife shots can be anything from, bang, I got a lucky shot of a black-capped chickadee taking off, which is much more rare, by the way, to I have one shot of a couple of baby owls on the nest. Baby great horned owls. And I'll tell you, there's just nothing cuter than a pair of baby great horned owls. I was 7 hours on that nest because for the first 6 hours and 45 minutes, those two owls were out of position. They were turned and deeper in the top of the broken tree where they had their nest, and they were much more hidden behind a protruding piece of bark.
Yeah.
After 7 hours or after 6 hours and 45 minutes, they moved. And oh, happy day.
Yeah.
and 400 images later, I was very happy.
So then, when turning it back to just tips on how to do this stuff, what are some problems that you've encountered as you've traveled from, South Florida all the way up through Northeast Alaska and all these different places that you find yourself in? What are some of the things that you can give us? It might be, okay, when you're traveling, make sure you have this in your bag because, most people don't think about it. But if you don't have it when you get there, you're in trouble. What are some little tidbits you can share?
Well, that's a great question, too. I am not one of these pack light people. I bring everything.
There's the oven, the microwave, the DVD player.
You're not far off. I mean, on the trip last year to Kaktovik, which is the island we go to in the Arctic Ocean to shoot polar bears, I brought my extension tubes.
Well, yeah.
I didn't know if I'd come across some, you know, little Arctic flower that I'd probably never see. Well, I'll probably see it this year. But I didn't know what I'm going to encounter. And to not have my extension tubes with me when I wanted that shot, I would be so angry. I'm, you know, 3,500 miles from home and, probably a good 2 weeks away from extension tubes. And, so I don't play that game. I bring it all.
So beat the old Boy Scout motto, right? Be prepared.
Be prepared. Carabiners can be your friend. Yeah. You can carabiner all sorts of stuff onto your goofy photographer's vest. And the day will come where something you carabinered on is going to bail you out. You're going to nail the shot, and you'll never think that vest is goofy again. So that's the first thing. I bring everything. Okay. But the biggest problem you run into is no wildlife. And that is something that really is as frustrating as can be. I mean, I watch the local birding boards and look for, sightings of a particular bird. I really have a fascination for raptors, and I just love owls. I don't know how anybody could not love owls. Owls, they're beautiful. They're purpose-built. If you're a rodent, they're the most vicious thing on the planet.
Yeah.
They're gorgeous. And they have these big eyes and this look that says, I know more stuff than you do, and we both know it. So
the whole wise old owl thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Nothing not to like about them. Yeah. But I have a really tough time finding them. So that
because
goes back
they're smarter than you, right? They're the wise old owl, so they know how to avoid you.
That's exactly right. And their bark color. Yeah. So if you're bark color and you're sitting in a tree, I mean, camouflage is what they do for a living, so they're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
So one of the things is use local knowledge. Local knowledge can be anything from your local Audubon clubs, so your Audubon sanctuaries, yep, to birding clubs, to, for instance, here in New England, we have a thing called Mass Bird, and it's an Audubon site where people report spottings of different birds. And that kind of knowledge alone will tell you who's where. In fact, this year we have what they call an eruption of snowy owls. The snowy owls come south because there's not enough food way up north. Their favorite food is lemmings, and that population is cyclical, crashing about every 3 years, 3 to 4 years. Yeah. Well, it crashed this past year. Here they come. You just about can't swing a dead cat without hitting a snowy owl. And if you look at things like Mass Bird, it'll tell you where they are. Who's seen them? How many are there? Where are they on the particular site? So local knowledge is huge. Right. So that's the first thing. Maybe that's the second thing. As far as challenges, of course, the photographer's perpetual challenge is not enough light.
Yeah.
We almost never have too much light. And I hope the day will come when we're all shooting at ISO, 3.2 million. And, we can shoot by starlight, but that's not here yet.
Right.
So
or
that
you can
means
just hang out. You can hang out and wait for the sun to go supernova. But that that might bring other problems.
Sure. Oh, what's the worst that could possibly happen?
Exactly. So a little heat.
So you're gonna look for positions on the wildlife where hopefully you've got enough light, but oftentimes you're deep in the woods. So now the next problem you're gonna run into is how does your camera perform with high ISO? And I always recommend, in fact, I did a blog post about this a few weeks back, maybe a couple months back. My suggestion is that you know your camera's ISO performance as it relates to noise before you have to. And so you do that by finding a nice high contrast scene, shoot it at every single ISO setting, look at the images, then go into post and start pulling up the shadows. And then look at the images again. At that point, use whatever noise reduction software you have and make a decision. You'll then be in a position to say, you know what, unless it's a really unusual situation with this camera, I want to keep my ISO below some number that you've determined by actually seeing it.
Yeah.
So those are a couple of things to think about.
Okay. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about sharing. So you know, we could talk about capturing the images and packing your gear bag and travel and all that stuff for a long time. But then what it really comes down to is once you have that image of that owl that you think is the most amazing thing in the world, then what? So what does that mean on your side? So you're atypical, right? So you're not going to be like the average photographer. But for the average photographer out there, you know, say I got that shot. What do I do next? If I got, how do I share it? Do I print it? Do I hang it on my wall? Do I sell it? What do I do?
Oh boy, could you actually hear the chill that just went up my spine?
I thought that was static in the line. I don't know.
No, because I think you're going to say something like TwitPic and Facebook and, you know, oh boy.
Well, yeah, so I didn't though. I avoided that specifically.
Yeah. So I'm still just dipping my toes in this. Now, on my website, I do a new article on photography every week, and I'll post images there. And that's fine. But things like Twitter and Facebook, I actually hired somebody. I actually have my first employee. God bless her. She's wonderful. Her job is to do all this stuff and put some of these images out there at a very low resolution, because it just – I have not yet gotten to the point where I'm willing to put stuff out there that's stealable. That would make me crazy. Not that I have that far to go, but it would make me crazy.
You mean just the fear of driving somewhere in Florida and seeing one of your owl pictures on a billboard?
Man, yeah. I've got this gorgeous shot of a mother polar bear with a first-year cub, little baby bear. He's got his head resting on mom's back and his eyes are closed. It's just this wonderful shot. It's this perfect Kodak moment, and may Kodak rest in peace.
Hey, they're not gone yet. Come on.
Oh, man. Talk about heartbreaking. Yeah. But I'll tell you, the day that I get someplace and see that image on somebody's billboard or advertisement for Alaska Air, or I'm just going to blow my brains out. So I'm not over that yet. But now,
are you registering everything are you bulk uploading low res images to the copyright office?
You know, as soon as I start eating a higher fiber diet and taking my vitamins and doing push-ups, what else am I supposed to do? Let's see. Then I'll register. You know, I know I need to do it. Haven't done it yet.
That sounds like that might be another bullet item for your first employee to register all your images.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those, I know I should do it. Eat my green beans.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, then it becomes another revenue stream, because the scenario changes. Right now, if you drive down the highway in Florida and you see your owl image on a billboard, you're just going to go cry. But if you had registered it, then you'd be tap dancing and stopping by the next bar because it's a big payday.
I know. It's actually on my list of stuff to do, and I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
It's a very busy thing growing a little business like this. Oh, yeah. While I actually own another retail store that's unrelated to photography. So I'm literally working 7 days a week and have been for the last 3 years, and that's my excuse. And it doesn't matter.
All right. Well, as soon as we hang up this call, you're going to go register all your images.
Right? Promise.
At some point between now and infinity, you're going to do it.
Right. Well, so you'll never have to say this in a public forum again.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm going to ask you next time we talk. So let's talk about post-processing. So you mentioned, you know, using noise reduction software and post-processing and all that stuff. What are you using? Are you an Aputure guy, Bridge guy, Lightroom?
I started off as a Photoshop CS3 guy in digital, mm-hmm. and found I was using mostly Bridge. Now, the reason that I don't do heavy post in my wildlife imagery is that I really want to get out and tell the story, which I do to a lot of camera clubs and libraries and wildlife clubs. I want to tell them that they can get out and do this too. These beautiful animals are there and they're accessible. All it takes is, first of all, your decision to do it and the time and the persistence, and you will create great images. Yeah. So for me to go and do these slideshows and these presentations and show images I created later in post is really kind of defeats the purpose. Now, when I do landscapes and architecture and portraiture, well, sure, you know, we'll do post to a fairly well.
Right.
So, but to answer the question, I left Photoshop I got really irritated at Adobe's practice of refusing to make older versions of Photoshop compatible with newer cameras. Mm-hmm. Their reply is basically, you know, expletive deleted, upgrade.
Right, and you're talking specifically about the raw processing engine and how absolutely. You have to have the latest and greatest in order to have the latest processing engine.
That is correct. And I just found that so repulsive. I at one point made the decision, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going away. I bought my first Apple and I went and bought Aperture and I've been there ever since. Okay, so
gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I've heard that before. In fact, I think this week on this last show that we recorded, we're in March right now. It's March 30th, 2012, and the last show we recorded, someone on the show mentioned that was the primary reason why they were upgrading was because of the raw processing engine, and for the compatibility. It might have been Doug Kay, I think it was, for the compatibility. So basically, what you're raging against the machine for is why he needed to update, you know. And I think I even threw out there, would you be upgrading to CS6 if Adobe made the camera raw engine available separately, like even as a $30, $40, $100 even, you know, separate purchase if you just wanted the processing engine to plug into previous versions of Photoshop? And I think his answer was, I think he would just get that processing engine. So yeah, I understand that.
It's just a lousy way to do business. But, you know, if you want to play in this sandbox, those are the rules, and you have to go along with it. My decision was to spend about $3,000 on some Mac gear and some software and turn my back and feel better about the whole enterprise.
Right. Right. Well, in the end, no one's asking you, unless you're a photographer like me on a podcast, what you use for post-processing.
Right. Well, my daughter uses Photoshop and Lightroom.
Yep.
And in fact, she's a Nikon shooter. I'm a Canon shooter. She's Lightroom Photoshop. I'm Aperture Photoshop. So
good. It doesn't matter.
Right. It's a mixed household. So yep.
Good. All right. Let's end this. And we exchanged emails before this, and I commented on your self-promotional powers. So you're a self-promoter, and I love that. That is good. And a lot of photographers don't have that ability. It's more of, you know, they have for better or for worse, a lot of photographers that need to promote themselves may have the mindset of, well, my work will speak for itself, you know, or if I build it, they will come, you know, that kind of, you know, the field of dreams, you know, which never gets built. So, like, talk to me a little bit about that. You know, because you're doing a lot of stuff, and but you managed to get the word out about the stuff that you're doing in a unobtrusive way. So, just give me your mindset and how you do that stuff.
Well, my mindset is I have no idea what I'm doing.
That's great.
If you want to know how to do self-promotion, look at a guy like Rick Salmon. Mm-hmm. Rick really knows his stuff. I mean, he's out there. He's known by everybody, universally loved. I mean, the guy's great.
Yeah.
I'm doing a blog. I mean, I wrote this blog. I do a new article every weekend. And by the end of the first year, I had about 10 unique visitors a day. And I kept looking and kind of looking up to see if I could find that cold water pipe so I could throw a rope over it and hang myself. All this work and no one's listening. Yeah. But I kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And now, you know, I'm a little over 100 unique visitors a day. And it's getting there.
Yeah.
I write an occasional article for the online edition of the Boston Globe. They have at boston.com, they have a section called Raw. You have to dig pretty deep to find it these days, but it's down there, and I've got a few articles in there. I've worked on developing relations with sponsors. I now have 4.
How do you get a sponsor? Mm. A lot of photographers are like, I want to be sponsored, but I don't. Right. I just call them up and say, can I have some money, or what do you do?
Okay, well, so that's the first thing about approaching people. I now have One Stop Photo. They're a pro lab. Mm-hmm. The number one stop, FOTO.com. Hunts Photo, which everybody knows, huntsphotoandvideo.com. Mm-hmm. They're a great dealer. I have the Mac Group. I'm sure you've heard of the Mac Group.
Sure.
Yeah, so, you know, we've got a lot of good sponsors. And the way I approach them is to, first of all, state, I'm not looking for money and I'm not looking for free stuff. Oh, I also, what am I saying? Lens Pro To Go, my other sponsor, Lens Pro To Go, a great rental company, lensprotogo.com. So, you know, I approached them and said, I'm looking for a relationship. This has to work for both of us. Mm-hmm. Right?
And that's how you position it? I'm looking, this was like dating, because you, I can imagine you saying that in a club or something, right?
Well, okay.
Hey, let me buy you a drink. I'm looking for a relationship, and this has to work for both of us, you know?
I'm married almost 33 years now. Very happy.
Did you use that line on her when you?
I did not. Mostly because I hadn't thought of it. But yeah,
it is a good line.
Hey, baby, what's your sign? This has to work for both of us.
That's By the way, could you sign this NDA before we proceed?
Right. I need a waiver of liability. Exactly. That's terrific. Right. So. You know, I think companies are used to having people approach them with their hands out. You know,
yeah.
I'll say nice things about you if you gimme.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. So I approached all four companies and said, look, I'm not looking for money. I'm not looking for free stuff. So for all these sponges, these four people, Hunts, Lens Pro To Go, One Stop Photo, and the Mac Group, I have not received a dime, nor do I want to receive a dime. I'm not asking for it. What I need from them is their help in getting a lot more eyeballs on what I do.
Oh, that's good.
You know, I became completely convinced that there is a rock solid business in taking people to the Arctic. And that's what I'm working on the most heavily of all. But what I need is lots and lots and lots more eyeballs on what I do. I mean, we're working on a tour right now, hoping to pull off the test run this year to Baffin Island. Do you know where Baffin Island is?
I don't think I've ever heard those syllables put together. I don't know where that is.
Ever hear of the Northwest Passage?
Yes.
For which so many died.
Right? Yes. Yep.
Baffin Island sits in the Northwest Passage.
Wow.
It's this very long island. It's just south of Ellesmere Island. Ellesmere Island is the last thing you can get to before the North Pole, at least in this hemisphere. So we're going to Baffin Island. There's a bird sanctuary there. There's wildlife all over the place. But I need millions upon millions of eyeballs. And with the podcast, I guess we'll have earballs. But I need a lot more people to see what we do. And so that was my desire in approaching these four companies. So again, not looking for money, not looking for free stuff. And what I'm looking for is a relationship that works for both.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'll just piggyback on that. You know, when I was working at Adobe, you know, managing professional photography, marketing and Lightroom and all that sort of stuff, I would get approached by photographers multiple times a day asking for sponsorship, you know, and the one thing that was common for most of them was they wanted Adobe to sponsor them either with money or with software for a workshop or something like that, but they didn't have much to give in return. So, you know, and some would even say, yeah, I've been using your software for years and I'm running this workshop and I'm going to expose you to 100 people, you know, and I would like free software to give to them, you know, you're asking Adobe to give you free software to, you know, for things. So it's unrealistic. So the ones that were successful with me, you know, and this is like a nugget for people that are looking for sponsorship, were the ones that approached with a clear value add to the company. So if you come in and say, hey, I'm going to talk about your company. I'm going to blog about it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to expose you to this many people, which is a lot of people that you would not have access to before. I'm going to do A, B, and C, all this stuff. And all I want in return is this and to be able to use your logo, you know. And some of them would even say, hey, you know, my value add to you is me putting the Adobe logo on my website to put in front of my 500 visitors, you know?
Right.
You know, I don't know, but I'd say, but you know, the Adobe logo is kind of recognized already and it doesn't really need exposure. Right. So if you approach these companies, do them a favor and just go in with a value add and be realistic. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I think a lot of this comes down to, do you believe in your own work?
Yeah.
Does your work speak for itself? You know, if you come to Alaska with me, you come to this little island in the Arctic Ocean, I am going to put you 50 feet from the polar bears, and you will come home with images that will turn your friends green. I believe in that work. I am not looking to have Lens Pro To Go and Hunts and all these guys fund my dream. I will work my dream. My work will speak for itself.
Yeah.
Those tours will speak for themselves. I think if you really want to go out there and get sponsors, don't go out there with your hand out.
Yep, that's a really good point. Well, you know, I don't want to suck up any more of your time on this beautiful Friday. So let's, first of all, this has been a great interview. So I want to put you on the spot and ask you if you will come on This Week in Photo again as a regular guest so we can pick your brain, you know, from time to time.
I would like nothing better.
All right. Well, that's we'll make sure that happens. And then finally, where can people go to find out, you know, what you're up to, and where would you like to point the TWIP army to be exposed to more Charlie McPherson?
Well, I think the simplest place is the website. Again, there's a new article on photography every week, and there's a photo contest, by the way. I have actually taken a page out of the TWIP book, and I do the one word assignment, no questions allowed.
Good.
So I went real simple for this coming month. The one word assignment is landscape.
That's easy.
You got to find the landscape. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, this month, the prize is One Stop Photo is offering a free double matted and framed 11x14. So, very nice.
Very good.
So there at the website, you'll find all that stuff. It's theamazingimage.com. And then we are on Twitter at theamazingimage. And Facebook is facebook.com/theamazingimage. And if you can't find me there, any of those three places, you're just not trying.
That's good. Well, Charlie, thanks again for chatting with me. It's been a really interesting conversation. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Frederick, it's been my pleasure, and I will look forward to talking to you and the TWIP Army again.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a million.